Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm super excited about this week's show because I have in the studio my best friend Doug.
I'm in the studio.
To talk about the Warriors.
I am here to talk about the Warriors. I'm so happy to be here.
This is only like maybe your
second time.
Third or fourth. We did Monster Squad here.
Fourth time.
We did Starship Troopers here. We did Best Friend Sleepover here.
No, I meant it's my second time doing two. So it's the second set.
Got it. The second set of two podcasts.
That's correct.
I got it.
You see what I'm
It's the conclusion
saying.
To your quadrilogy of having Doug in the studio.
Quadrophenia.
Exactly. We're going to be talking about The Warriors by listener request. Our good friend and supporter of the site, Albert Muller, asked that we do a show on The Warriors. He's a huge Walter Hill fan, as am I.
I thought I was too until I realized that Walter Hill is not Jack Hill.
They're both terrific.
They are?
Yes.
Okay.
They're both very good, and we're going to talk about both.
Both?
Both. My both. Very soon.
Is it Albert Muller or Albert Mueller?
You can ask him that.
I will.
The next time you see him.
Is he
He's
right
standing
behind
right behind you now.
Albert!
Anyway, we're going to be talking about the Warriors in a few minutes.
Sure.
But first, Douglas.
Yes.
You're in from California.
I'm in from California.
Which is so much fun.
It's so much fun.
It's great to have you.
It's good to be here.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I'm so happy to be in Chicago.
Yes. Where the snow is falling.
The snow is falling. Wait, what? You asked me a question, though,
no
right?
No methane is leaking?
They stopped that leak.
I heard.
No, I flew in from Los Angeles for both F This Movie Fest and for some personal reasons, and I got my fill of F This Movie, and I'm so happy, and frankly, I'm good to go for like probably several months.
You're good?
I got my fill.
So you're done.
I got my fill, is my point. I feel kind of bad because I feel very lucky, obviously, also, I've been on the previous two shows, the show before the F This Movie Fest, I was on to talk about everything. That's where we talked about the K-Rate Kid. And then I was on the group show. And I've been planning this trip as a surprise to you.
I was
Mr.
surprised.
Mr. B.
I was surprised.
I surprised
Danny
you. That's right. Correct. So I have not seen too much lately, although today we did watch.
Didn't you watch a movie on the plane?
No. Because now it's totally different, by the way. I mean,
Okay,
what's the deal with the peanuts? The whole thing with airplane travel is there used to be a time where they'd have communal TVs and they would show a random movie, oftentimes Maleficent,
right.
Which is
usually
terrible.
Miss Congeniality 2, Armed and Fabulous.
Usually The Devil Wears Prada, usually...
Sometimes The Devil Wears Nada, which is one of those late night HBO movies.
What's the Sacha Baron Cohen movie where his... Not the Sacha Baron Cohen movie. What's Sacha Baron Cohen's girlfriend's name?
Rada Mitchell, Confessions of a
Shopaholic. I saw that in a plane too. All terrible movies, right?
That's the way to see these movies.
Correct. I also saw Midnight in Paris on a flight once, and that's a really good movie.
Sure.
And it's not appropriate, not good, not a good way to watch it on a plane.
No.
But now every airline seems to be kind of figuring out that they can charge for people to watch movies. So every newish airline has TV screens in the back of headrests. And if you want to watch a movie, you have to pay.
Oh.
So I did not watch one. And I flew Virgin. Because that's how I do. And they do have a DirecTV feed. So I would just like was flipping through the channels. And I'm like, I should be reading or doing something productive. Instead, I'm just like vegging on the chair.
Watching King of Queens reruns?
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. So I did not watch a movie on the plane, unfortunately. But today I watched Walter? It's Jack Hill's.
You watched a Walter Hill movie and a Jack Hill movie today.
You really fucked me up because we watched...
I gave you all the hills.
Streets of Fire and on... I feel like a doofus. I feel like a pure dummy because on the F This Movie Fest 5 podcast, I had mentioned how I love Walter Hill. We should talk about Switchblade Sisters. And you're like, hey, asshole. That's not Walter Hill. That's Jack Hill.
I'm always willing to talk about Switchblade Sisters, for the record.
And by the way, there's the poster right there signed by Mr. Jack Hill. I was there.
Joanne Nail is looking right at us.
I think I'm the one who like said,
She's given me the eyes.
Hey, Jack Hill, I'm going to take a picture and you're going to like it.
You are absolutely the person who said that, because I would not have asked him.
No? Well, you got it now, forever.
I have a picture of me and Jack Hill.
In perpetuity.
Right?
So I was the asshole that said, I like Jack Hill, or Walter Hill, I like Switchblade Sisters. And you said, no, it's different people. So today you totally effed me, because we watched both a Walter Hill film and a Jack Hill film.
That's correct.
Pit Stop, which was originally called The Winner. And what can you say about Pit Stop / The Winner? It's a 91-minute long movie. It's black and white. It stars some people that are vanilla. It's about racing. It seems like Jack Hill had a bunch of B-roll, a bunch of stock footage of stock cars racing in a figure eight and or stock cars racing in a loop-de-loop. And then they put a story together using all that stock footage, including like lots of insert shots of Sid Haig gripping the steering wheel and like pretending to drive, because apparently he didn't know how to drive at the time. This is from shot in 1967, released in 1969, seminal.
I had never seen Pit Stop before and had the Arrow Blu-ray, which came out fairly recently, and have really loved every Jack Hill movie that I've seen thus far, with the exception of, I think, his last movie, which is called Sorceress, I think, and that's the movie that he kind of quit and walked off. And so I don't know if you really count that as a Jack Hill movie, but I remember a couple of years ago we saw Spider Baby, and it was like such a pleasant surprise that I was really hoping Pit Stop would be another Spider Baby. And it's not quite.
No, it's not. It's not even bad.
It's just such a specific kind of like 60s drive-in movie.
Yeah, we actually were talking about it briefly. And again, I don't know much about late 60s cinema, but I know that that's the era in which it was kind of transitioning into more longer, you know, Easy Rider is the example I pulled up. Not even knowing the relationship between that kind of movie and Pit Stop, but it felt like there's these insert scenes where they're on, for example, in Pit Stop, they're on dune buggies and they're just, you know, cruising around the desert. I don't even know where they're at. It's like just big sand dunes and they're just cruising around, and it's probably 4 minutes of no dialogue and kind of surfer music. And then it cuts to like them at a bonfire, and there's no plot to it, obviously. It's like cool shots.
Right.
Like fun, free Americans.
And super cheap to make. And so much of the movie is shot without sound. I mean, it feels very much like a Roger Corman production from that period.
Yeah.
Because he made lots of these kinds of movies, and he might have even been involved with Pit Stop, because I feel like he's interviewed in the special features, which we didn't watch. But so maybe he has some association, because it very much feels like an AIP movie from that time.
It's fine. I think that there's something there to like, especially if you're a fan of racing, because a lot of the
first half racing stuff is
insane.
It's figure eight racing, which I didn't even know was a thing. And some of you are rolling your eyes right now, but like, they're just fucking crashing into each other.
Yeah, it's like a precursor to Demolition Derby, but they're really not.
But
the
also
purpose is
a
not,
race.
Right, and the purpose is not to crash in. The purpose is to go in this figure eight.
Right.
But I think if you know this, if you're into racing, like a lot of the race car drivers are the real race car drivers from that time. And I think there's something to like there, and I think that there's definitely stuff to like. I do think that the male lead is the most vanilla actor. He looks like he's 40. He's in a lot of older stuff, like East of Eden, I looked up, and some other, you know, like kind of the 50s time period movies, but he doesn't play the part of a teenager very well because he looks very old. He's also just kind of nothing. He's an empty suit.
His name is Richard Davalos, and he's credited as Dick Davalos, which it's like a perfect name for that actor. Hey, I'm Dick Davalos. I'm in this new picture called The Winner. Ellen Burstyn is in it.
Yes.
Credited as Ellen McRae.
Right, because her real name is Edna Ray Gilluli. So she probably come before she decided on. Well, no, she married a Burstyn, right? Is that why she got.
I assume so.
John Burstyn, I think.
Richard Burstyn.
Kevin Burstyn.
Yeah.
Kyle Burstyn. It's crazy to think, because obviously we know her so well as an older actress, and she's a cutie in this movie.
And this is only a few years before The Exorcist, really.
Yeah, and she looks, it's funny because we looked up her age, I think she was 35 when she made this movie, and she looked like, she could be 23.
Right.
And she's, I guess one of the more well-known, aside from Sid Haig, she's pretty much the only actor I recognize.
And Sid Haig is playing a character named Hawk Sidney, which is a great name, and if you told me that Dick Davalos' real name was Hawk Sidney, I would say, yeah, I believe that.
It's three steps removed.
Sid Haig is trying very hard to be entertaining, which I always appreciate.
Yeah, for sure.
He's giving a crazy performance. And of course, Beverly Washburn from
Spider Baby.
From Spider Baby, the daughter who's not Jill Banner.
The movie to me, it is approaching all these subjects of, you know, kind of obviously the race car culture and people who are maybe outside the norm and risking their lives and rebels. The whole movie opens with like illegal street racing and kind of an older gentleman tapping a younger driver to race his cars in this dangerous race. And for a movie that has that subject matter, it also feels very square. Like, sure. It's a very square movie. Everyone sure. is there. I mean, obviously, I'm not looking necessarily for like the sexiest kind of movie, but there, like, everyone is every character. There's no chemistry between the characters. It's very, just, right. you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say about it. I'm glad I saw it.
Sure.
I might revisit it someday, but I feel like
Pit Stop.
It would be low down on the list of Jack Hill movies that I would revisit.
Well, sure. And there's still Jack Hill stuff you haven't seen, right?
There are a few.
Right.
But I'm all about Coffee and Switchblade Sisters.
Well, sure. That's when he made the transition to stuff like...
Those are my two favorites.
Yeah, mine too. What are we talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
And I also saw Mulva 2, Kill Teen Ape.
Parts. Parts of Mulva 2,
Kill
Teen Ape.
Do you want to give some backstory?
What backstory could we possibly
you
need to give?
This DVD in 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
Mr. Bromley purchased this movie called Mulva 2.
I didn't purchase
it. Kill Teen Ape.
I requested it. Okay, so DVD Verdict, where I review for... would put out lists of like, here's the product we have available. And then you kind of request like, yeah, I'd be interested in reviewing this or this or this. And sometimes you get it. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get stuff that you've never heard of or whatever.
Right. Sometimes you walk away. Sometimes you run.
But I saw Mulva 2 Kill Teen Ape, having never seen Mulva 1. But
did you find yourself lost?
Yeah, no. Surprisingly, no. But I requested it because it stars Debbie Rochon. An actress who's
a scream queen,
famous for being in a lot of trauma movies and who I've always been a huge fan of. And so I was like, well, it's a movie starring Debbie Rochon. I'll request Mulva 2 Kill Teen Ape. Had very low expectations. It's like shot on video, edited in camera. It's an hour long. And yet I was like, this movie has a weird charm and I'm laughing at it way more than I thought I would. And so then I was like showing scenes to Doug.
Yes. In 05 or 06.
And we continue to quote certain things
for
to this
years.
Day.
Right.
But I sold the DVD off.
Yeah. Within like the first year, like I've
foolishly.
Pretty much, well,
I
you said,
like,
I think you even said like, I've, you know, like I've gotten all I can get from this DVD. I've only got so much shelf space. And then
it was a mistake.
So then 11 years pass, and about a week before F This Movie Fest 5, you send me a YouTube link to the full movie, which is, I don't know if it was up.
But I queued it up to the scene I wanted
you
to
see.
Oh, did you?
I don't think it, well, on my phone, because I got
it. It was supposed to be queued up to the kitchen fight.
That's hilarious, because on my phone, I don't think that it synced. When I clicked on the link, I don't think it opened in the app. I think it just started playing at the beginning. But my instinct was to fast forward it with my thumb to the kitchen scene. I kid you not. I went
I
to the kitchen scene.
I had it queued up, too.
I appreciate that. But
when the alien child shows up and she says, meep, boop, what is that, Polish?
It is a really, really dumb movie. like Patrick said, it's all edited in camera.
But like smart dumb.
It's smart dumb. It knows exactly what it is. And there's definitely jokes that are eye rolling. Like they talk about the cancellation of Buffy and it's just like a groan. And there's stuff that's so just bizarre and funny. And if you have this a similar sense of humor, it might be worth your while just to like kind of skim and find. And if you're not into kind of trauma, even sub-trauma B movies, this is going to feel like the worst thing ever made probably to you. So you're going to maybe question our opinions.
And we know that most of our readers/listeners are not fans of trauma. That has come through loud and clear.
Junesploitation category in 2016.
SOBs. So now I'm just going to make Return to Nukem High Volume 2 or Volume 1 Day for Junesploitation require that everyone watch it.
Oh, I was on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I saw one of the female actresses, which is redundant, in Return to Nukem High.
Yeah.
Her last name
changed.
Changed because she married the male lead.
She married Clay.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I hope they met at, this is my, in my
they
head,
did.
I'm like, I hope they met on set and fell in love and now they're married
that's
and she
exactly
changed her name.
How it happened.
What a great trauma, what a tromance that is.
Asta Paredes is now Asta von Karlowitz.
Yes, that's awesome. Congratulations if you're listening and I know you are.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they are, but speaking of Asta, I watched her latest movie.
Okay.
Which is called Sociopathia.
Okay.
Very low budget horror film. She plays kind of the second lead. And, you know, it's available on iTunes now or on DVD. She's good in it. It reminded me a lot of the movie May.
Oh.
And I love the movie
May. May is great.
And it's not quite as good as May.
Mm.
It's very interesting because it's a horror film that's essentially an entirely female cast. I believe there's like maybe two men in the movie, but
probably carrying all the luggage.
It's an entirely female cast. Does some interesting stuff and actually reminded me a lot of the next movie that I'm going to talk about. If you have a tolerance for kind of low budget horror, I think it could be worth checking out. Honestly, I wanted to support Asta, so that's why I watched it, and I kind of wanted to see what she was doing outside of Return to Nukem High. She and I have stayed in touch, and Clay, like
that's
all
nice
of us, kind of have stayed in touch. So,
well, they seem like really sweet, like sincere, awesome
yeah,
people.
Yeah, they're super great, and I won't go so far as to say like we're friends, but we're super friendly,
sure,
in contact with one another. So
would they help
full
you move
disclosure
if you needed to move?
I think if I did, honestly, I said, would you guys help out? I honestly think they would. They're just those kinds of people.
They're
but
really nice.
So I think it's worth checking out for her. The movie was mixed for me. I can't give
okay
it an unqualified recommendation, but there's things to like
sure
in it. And then I also watched a movie called The Voices, which stars Ryan Reynolds.
Star of Deadpool?
Star of the highest grossing movie ever, I believe. I believe
the
it outgrossed
Avatar?
The Force Awakens. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Darth Van Wilder?
It did, by the way, outgross like the third one, Revenge of the Sith, like in its opening weekend.
All right.
Which is bananas. So The Voices is the second film from Margene Satrapi, who made Persepolis.
Okay.
And Heather Wixon named it as one of her favorite 10 horror films from last year. And I'd said, ah, shit, I haven't seen it. So I wanted to catch up with it. I have now. It has a plot very similar to that of Sociopathia.
Which is similar to May.
Correct.
Okay.
Sociopathia and May have a doll component that kind of carries over.
Okay.
And The Voices in Sociopathia have a component where, like, the main character is talking to their victims, like, after they're dead. So it's a little bit like Maniac 2.
Okay.
The movie Maniac. There's no Maniac 2. Maniac as well. starring Joe Spinell, right? Certain shots are really, really beautiful. And honestly, for the first like half hour, I was way on board with it. Ryan Reynolds plays just kind of a nerdy, awkward guy who talks to his pets and they talk back to him and tell him to kill people or he kills people because he's crazy or whatever. And I was really on board with it for like the first half hour. And then I just feel like it really repeats itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. Like, I enjoyed the time I spent watching it, and Ryan Reynolds is good. Anna Kendrick is in it.
Oh, okay.
Gemma Arterton.
Oh, okay.
Like,
right.
Good Lord. So
she's Hansel. No, she's Gretel.
She's Gretel. Correct. And she's also in Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. When are we getting that follow-up? When is Prince of Persia 2 going to come out? America hasn't stopped talking about Prince of Persia.
No. And all the time sand.
There's so much time sand in that movie. When are we going to get Return of the Time Sand? anyway, so The Voices, I believe, is streaming on Amazon Prime or on Hulu. If you are interested, I definitely think it's worth seeing, but again, I didn't.
Do you have a Hulu subscription?
I just subscribed last week.
Okay.
For like a, we get a week free trial.
Yeah.
Because I was...
You're like, I miss the Mindy Kaling project.
Well, we're testing out, like, do we need cable?
Gotcha.
Can we be these people who
we're
like,
actually doing the same thing.
Are watching
yeah.
stuff on Hulu?
We're sitting down to like make a list of like what are things yeah. that we watch on TV and what can we live without and what would the expenses be? And I feel like now does Hulu you subscribe now? I've seen a couple things.
A couple.
I feel like a couple years ago my sister-in-law got Hulu and there were still commercials.
Yes.
And they paid for it. Is that still the case?
Yes.
That is kind of crazy.
Yes.
Right.
There's two price points. I think it's like $8 a month.
For the commercials.
With commercials.
Gotcha.
And the commercials, there weren't commercials in the movies.
Okay.
Probably the shows, and I haven't watched very many shows on there. Most of the shows I've watched are like 11 minutes, because it's like regular show or Adventure Time or something like
gotcha.
That. So it's like 11 minutes. The movies don't have commercials, and they are uncut. And then I think it's like $13 a month
for no commercials.
Commercial free. So if you're going to watch all of your shows, maybe that's worth it. But like that on top of Netflix, you're still talking about.
It's a savings.
It is, right? I mean,
right.
You're talking about $23, $24
well, then you,
a
but
month.
But you have to add on Amazon
to get,
Prime.
Right.
HBO. I would get HBO now.
Right. And you're still paying for internet.
Correct. So it starts to add up, is
right.
my point.
Oh, for sure.
Now, how many different streaming services do you subscribe to?
Well, I let one streaming service
gotcha.
Lapse. So right now, we have Netflix, we have Amazon Prime, we have this week trial of Hulu.
Do you think you'll renew?
I don't know. And the good thing is, like, you could do it month by month, because one of the things that I like about it is they have a huge library of Criterion movies.
Okay.
Which sometimes I end up like blind buying because I'm like, well, I want to see that.
Yeah, and Criterion has the right reputation.
Right, and so I'm like, yeah, but now I can just like watch 10 of them in a month for $8 and not
right.
buy them, you know?
Right.
So I can finally see the Virgin Spring, you know?
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Right, right. I'm right there with you about the spring part.
So we may hang on to it for like a month and
okay.
then cancel. You can cancel, you know,
that's what
anytime.
I was going to ask too, because obviously... Some of the services start to overlap with the movies that they offer. I know Netflix is pretty much, if it's on Netflix, it might only be on Netflix. But if you like subscribe to a Stars or a Showtime, you know, package, those things are also seemingly on Prime, I think, or some. There,
and
there's,
on Hulu, I believe.
Yeah, there's crossover. So I'm like, I guess Hulu's their sales point is that you can get Criterion stuff. I mean, they've got stuff that you can't find
and
elsewhere.
And like crazy TV shows.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Grease Live. If you missed Grease Live,
right.
you can catch up with it on Hulu.
But here's the thing too. You could also, I mean, if you cord cut, that's right. You could get the digital tuner and still get all the local channels.
Right.
And watch Grease Live if you really want to
watch
Grease Live.
Which we may end up doing, honestly. Like,
yeah.
Because, yeah, at this point, like, we would keep TV for like when the Super Bowl is on or when like, you know
but
what I mean?
But you could
like,
still get that over the digital antenna.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
yeah.
So we're thinking about it.
Yeah.
I don't know, because at this point, like, we're DVRing a couple shows.
I know.
But, like, I don't
exactly.
care.
Exactly.
Like,
right.
If I never see New Girl again, my life's going to be fine, you know? Like, I still should probably go back and rewatch all of Taxi, you know? And
right.
that would be time better spent than keeping up with New
You're
Girl.
You're talking about Jimmy Fallon and Queen Latifah. I'm right there with you. Taxi sounds like a good movie to watch.
That's the movie that made him a star. That's why he left SNL.
That's right.
Tim Story's Taxi. Anyway, that's basically what I've seen lately.
All right.
Let's talk about the Warriors.
All right. All right.
This, if I'm not mistaken, was your first complete viewing of the Warriors, yes?
Yes. It was interesting before the fest started because I had... seen parts, most of Streets of Fire at your 30th birthday party, had forgotten a lot of it, and had seen, obviously, in The Warriors, there's so many scenes and memes that have
right,
come
right.
up from it that make it so familiar to me, even though I had never seen it before, which is what I've determined after watching it today. Like, I have never seen this from start to finish, even if I've seen scenes, that I would always kind of mix up the two in my head.
Right.
So Streets of Fire and The Warriors, which are directed by the same director.
Jack Hill.
And have a similar sort of like gritty street aesthetic, even though
right.
they're very different.
In one street, they're on, in one movie, the streets are on fire.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's the whole point. So yes, it was my first time watching it. And about 15 or 20 minutes in, I think I even leaned over to you and put my hand upon your thigh.
I remember it.
And then I said nothing. I just let it sit there. No, I said
I remember because I still have the blue balls.
I said I think
they hurt right now.
I said I think I love the Warriors. That's, I think I love this movie.
It's the correct response.
And it's a pretty great movie. It really is. I know we'll get more into the details of the film as we go on, but from the 30,000 foot perspective right now, like in just saying, like, what's your perspective? My first time watching the movie, it's really good.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Yeah. When we were watching Pit Stop, which we watched after the Warriors, I was like, I kind of wish we were still watching
the
Warriors.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because after we watched the Warriors, you gave me like a stack of movies and said, you know, let's watch something else. Let's pick something from this. And it's a lot of stuff I hadn't seen before and some things we had. And we went with Pit Stop because you hadn't seen it and I hadn't seen it before either. So we watched it and I kind of thought, well, there's a couple other movies I think I'd rather be watching Pit Stop.
The Warriors is the bomb. Real quick, let me back up to, you mentioned seeing Streets of Fire at my 30th birthday party. So my wife, who's wonderful, was very insistent on throwing me a 30th birthday party. I wanted no part of it. And then she said, well, what if like we rented out this place and you could do like a little film festival? You could show a movie. And I was like, well, no, I can't show a movie. If I can show three, I'm in. She's like, okay, we'll show three.
There wasn't any more compromises? Like, you didn't start at 10?
No, I went you three seemed a reasonable number. So that's how that whole tradition started. We've basically done that every year since. And so the three movies I picked were, I tried to pick one from each decade. So I went 80s, 90s, 2000s.
Refresh my memory.
So Streets of Fire, Joe versus the Volcano,
yes.
Wet Hot American Summer.
Yes.
In retrospect, only Wet Hot American Summer is like going to play with a crowd.
Sure.
And everyone was pretty much gone by that point because nobody else wants to stick around for three fucking movies. So Streets of Fire was first. And the reason you probably don't remember it that well is because I think everyone's reaction when they sat down, having never heard of it, was like, what the fuck is this movie? And that's funny because that's kind of the exact same response we got on Twitter during F This Movie Fest.
Oh, for sure.
Like the first reaction is always like, what is this?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's definitely, it's unlike anything you've seen before.
But also a little bit like everything you've seen, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's just very few filmmakers have combined those specific elements in one package.
Right. It was a little frustrating because I think Streets of Fire is the kind of movie that just has to wash over you. At least for me, it was like, I just need to accept this. Meaning like the songs kick ass. Diane Lane is super cute. I'm on board. Like it's, there's something about it. Even there's a specific, I didn't mention this during the previous podcast, but there's a specific sequence where the beat in the song was matching like black. It was like a hard black or, and a quick fade in, hard black, quick fade in. And it was just like, it made me so excited. It made me so energized to watch the next sequence because obviously it's like the music's great. I'm excited about the editing of Streets of Fire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's all these different things that kind of like feel familiar but are very kind of odd, all assembled way that they're assembled. But my point is you just have to let it wash over you. And if you allow that to happen, I feel like for me at least, when I allowed that to happen, I was able to really immerse myself and enjoy it as just like, well, I'm just going to be along for the ride. And then when you're able to stop thinking about like, what time period is this? It's like, that's when you're able to really get on board with it for me.
Well, and the Warriors has some of that too. And so it's interesting that the Warriors has become such a widely accepted cult movie where like, all the guys who like watch Spike TV also quote the Warriors, but they're not into Streets of Fire. Do you know what I mean? Like, and the Warriors does some of that same stuff where it's like, what time period is this?
Sure.
What, you know?
Well, I think I even read a little trivia piece that said they wanted to put a title card or a little subtitle at the start of the movie that said the near future.
Right.
But a couple reasons they didn't. I think one of the reasons was it came out in 1979 and someone had said like, well, people will, they just did that for Star Wars. For real, I read something that said like Star Wars
took place a long time ago.
Right, but they had a similar sort of like, you know, this isn't present day Indian Ocean. I didn't really care. But for me, the Warriors, I guess they're trying to make it more timeless. However, I will argue that the Warriors definitely feels like a late 70s, early 80s.
Sure.
Like, I think it takes place in that time period.
Were you
like,
going to say era?
I thought twice about saying era.
Era, Warriors.
I really thought
era, come out and play,
kid. I really thought
come
that
come out and fucking play, kid.
I really thought that the film took place. I mean, it's shot in the '70s, in the late '70s. It takes place in the, like, there's some sequences and so now there's some things in the background, like some advertisements and some cars that are used. Aside from, like, I think there's an old Cadillac hearse driven by the Riffs or some gang. Aside from that older car, which Streets of Fire uses a lot of older cars too, obviously. It's like, well, this just feels like the '70s. So I'm not really kind of confused about the time period. I think Streets of Fire, though, is a harder sell because it is trying harder to not be of a time period, but while being of three time periods.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, for both, I just kind of have to accept that, like, oh, this is some sort of alternate Walter Hill world, you know?
And I completely agree.
And that's fine.
Like, but I think the difference is the Warriors is an alternate Walter Hill time period in which it's still the same time, whereas Streets of Fire is an alternate time period in which it's all over the place.
Yeah.
It's kind of bouncing around. And that's where I think maybe people had the disconnect.
Right. It's all mashed up. Yeah, Warriors is like 1979 New York. It's just a 1979 New York that, like, never existed.
Exactly.
Because it's run by bands of gangs.
I will counter, though, that
different gimmicks.
The Spike TV crowd that maybe quotes it maybe hasn't seen The Warriors. Meaning, I think that the memes have become so ubiquitous and so many of the aesthetics have been borrowed by other movies. And, of course, Warriors come out to play with the clinking of the bottles is so kind of iconic in a weird way that they can kind of just cherry pick that moment and they're talking about the Warriors, but they're not talking about the Warriors because I think if they watch the whole movie from start to finish, it's kick-ass, but they might be turned off by it.
Right. I mean, so I love this movie a lot, and it's one of those movies where, like, I saw it and liked it and then saw it again and still liked it, and it's only been probably in the last 10 years. Escape from New York is kind of a similar thing for me where it was like, it was something that I always liked, and then having come back to it in the last decade, every time I revisit it, I'm like, fuck, I love this movie. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's so, so great, and I like a ton of Walter Hill movies. This and Streets of Fire are my two favorites, and you get a couple different Walter Hills. You know, there's like the studio for hire Walter Hill that made like Brewster's Millions, and then there's like kind of the John Ford, Howard Hawks, Sam Peckinpah mashup Walter Hill, which is like tough guys shooting people for a number of Southern Comfort or Extreme Prejudice or, you know, whatever. And then there's this in Streets of Fire, which is like whacked out comic book Walter Hill.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my favorite Walter Hill.
I can't imagine why that would be.
Right. That's weird. But I was watching this movie and really paying attention to, like you mentioned with Streets of Fire, the editing and even the shot composition in this movie. And part of this is like, so we watched the theatrical cut. A couple years ago, Walter Hill released what he calls the director's cut.
Which I think also has that subtitle about the near future.
Okay. And something else at the beginning, doesn't it? I thought you told me. Oh, narration by Orson Welles?
Yes. Okay. Narration by Orson Welles. Sorry.
The narrator of also Transformers the movie. Listen, I don't know if he's the narrator. He just plays the voice of Unicron.
Unicron.
I can't. Obelisk, look. It's Unicron. Anyway.
Should we talk about Transformers?
We might as well.
Yeah.
So, and then he added in all these comic book, like, panel transitions, which I don't love because they pull me out of the movie. They're not, like, the worst thing ever, but they pull me out of the movie because they call attention to themselves. And that's Walter Hill saying, like, this movie's a comic book. Like, we kind of got it without the wacky transitions. But that's the only version that's available on Blu-ray. Thankfully, I owned the original DVD, which is the theatrical cut, which is the version I prefer. Again, the changes are minimal, but I like it without the comic.
Do they still even have that DVD available?
I don't know. I don't know if it's out of print or what.
Probably is.
I wish, and I believe the last time this came up, somebody, maybe our friend Josh Perlman, who, by the way, get well soon, Josh Perlman. We love you. Mentioned that, like, you can buy the theatrical cut maybe on iTunes in HD, so you can still get it, you know, an HD version of it, just not a physical copy on Blu-ray. Anyway, so maybe having that in my head that Walter Hill was kind of deliberately making a very comic booky movie, I was paying attention to the shot compositions. There are not a ton of shots in the movie that where the camera, like, moves a lot. It's a lot of kind of static shots where there might be movement in the frame or just the way that, like, this shot and this shot and this shot added together tell a story. the way that comic book panels do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where like you'll see a panel of a hand on a map and then a train roaring by and then a shot of, it's like the Kuleshov effect, right? Where we just, that's how the story is put together, because he doesn't move the camera. I mean, he certainly moves it. It's not like it's all static shots, but he definitely seems to have comic book panels in mind in the way that the movie is shot. And so it was really interesting to see the editing, because it is, I feel like it's a very kind of kinetic movie. It's not slow,
no,
you know?
No.
Yeah. And the editing is so vital to that, because it's all the action kind of takes place in the cuts, not in the moving of the camera.
Yeah.
That's it. I just want to point that out.
I will say that if you are approaching this for the first time, I think your enjoyment of it, as my enjoyment of it, is kind of predicated on the notion that you need to put aside, like, there's some ridiculousness in this movie in terms of the, like you had mentioned before, the gangs having gimmicks, in terms of the gangs having uniforms and silly names and kind of their thing, that if you hang up on that, you're not going to be able to enjoy the movie.
Right.
And I think that speaks two ways. One, to the comic book nature of it, and two, to the timelessness. Like, when is this? Where is this? Because obviously in the 70s New York, there wasn't like a gang of mimes, or there wasn't a gang of like Mac Daddies in purple vests, or there wasn't a gang of Mork from Orcs on roller skates, which, by the way, the name of that game was the Punks.
Oh, sure.
Like so many of the other gangs, there's a gang of...
One of the punks was Craig Baxley.
Oh, really?
Future director of Action Jackson and Stone Cold.
One of the gangs is a baseball team.
The Baseball Furies.
And they are in full baseball regalia with like the stirrups and the pants and the hats, and they have crazy Kiss makeup. And we found out, we read some trivia that said, well, that's because Walter Hill loved baseball and loved Kiss, so why not? But they were called the Baseball Furies, so that makes more sense. And this gang of roller skaters that look like, you know, Robin Williams era, Mork and Mindy, they're called the Punks. So I'm like, well, come on, you're not really trying there. But my point is, if you are hung up on that, because in the very first sequences, they're showing all these gangs arriving like kind of a delegation, this conclave of
the gang summit.
Gang summit, right. All the envoys.
Led by Cyrus.
And they're all, it's very kind of cartoony.
Yeah.
But once you get past that, and once you get past that, I just sounded. Yeah, it's pretty great.
I had mentioned on our F This Movie Fest show, talking about Streets of Fire, that if you break it down to just like a one-line plot summary, that it sounds like the greatest movie ever. Warriors is kind of like that too, where it's just like a street gang has to fight its way back to its home. Like,
right.
That's awesome. I'm so on board for that movie. And that's essentially the movie. I mean, there's not like so much fighting, and
no.
They kind of break up and they have different wacky adventures. But I just love the idea. And again, talk about visual storytelling. In the opening, they're riding the train out to, where is the summit being held?
Supposedly, like, the very last stop in the Bronx.
Okay. And
it was actually shot in the upper west side of Manhattan. But it was like, yeah, they were, like, following the map, which are very hard to read.
Right.
That's a line in the movie.
But you have Rembrandt reading the map in the opening. And he's, like, kind of following all the stops. And that's essentially Walter Hill telling you, like, this is how far they're going to have to get back home.
Yeah.
After the shit goes bad. And that's such a great touch to tell you.
Well, it's showing you, and, you know, without telling you exactly how far away it is.
Especially if you don't know yet exactly what the movie's about.
We don't know, like, I don't know the geography all that well of New York, so it gave me a good shorthand in terms of...
It's a lot of trains.
A lot of boroughs.
Yeah. There's a convenience store.
A Flatbush.
There's an apartment where the Lizzies live.
Yeah, the Lizzies.
You don't want to go there, by
the
way.
No. It seems so good. It's like if I'm a sailor, I hear a beautiful song. And there's a beautiful maiden on a rock,
right.
And she's luring me to my death. Hey, we're all going to get laid. So, yeah, it's a great story that's so simple. They've got to go from point A to point B.
Right.
And they meet a couple
right.
gangs along the way and have to fight. Then there's misunderstandings. And then at the very end, there's like a very simple climactic scene that's really, really perfect. I do, if we're going to get into some details.
Let's.
I find the character, I forget her name, Macy? No, Marcy. Marcy is the female.
Mercy.
Deborah
Van Valkenburg.
It's my LA accent. I actually said Mercy. Mercy, Deborah von
Valkenburg.
Thank you. Thank you.
Not a problem.
Who you had told me, and I forgot this. She is the brunette daughter of Ted Knight in Too Close for Comfort. And she's also, she made an appearance.
Monroe.
She is the waitress.
Mr. Rush.
She is the waitress, diner waitress in Streets of Fire.
And Tom Cody's sister.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Michael Paré's sister in Streets of Fire. And she, someone made a funny comment that she, during Streets of Fire on Twitter, someone had commented that she is the 80s version of Rosario Dawson. And
right.
That was pretty appropriate, especially for Streets of Fire. The way she looks and the way she carries herself in Streets of Fire is very much Rosario Dawson. In this movie, she is just adorable and great and really cute. And she's trying to be like a New York tough. And doesn't quite sell it all that well. My one critique is that I like the idea. The movie is obviously very male-centric in terms of its, you know, 100 street gangs, and they're meeting at this delegation, and one street gang is kind of called out and has to fight their way back to their turf. So it's all dudes kind of fighting dudes, and she is the single sole female, aside from the Carmen Sandiego radio DJ, but she's the one female in
it. And the Lizzies.
And the Lizzies. I take that back. Yes, there's a female gang called the Lizzies. I think she's great, and I love her. I think the use of her is pretty clumsy. I don't exactly know. We're first introduced to her. She is on the orphan's turf.
Yeah.
She is loosely associated with the orphans.
And starts some shit.
Right. So she's not on board with the Warriors.
Right, right.
So she's basically this random person who's affiliated with this other gang. She kind of calls out the Warriors, or, you know, they basically calls out the orphans and says, you can't let them pass, and starts some major shit. Like, they were about to walk through scot-free, and she's the one who causes kind of a gang fight, and then she's basically adopted by the Warriors, and she
right.
goes along with them on the rest of their adventure. And
except for when she leaves, and then they find her again, and now she's wearing a coat. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Which is a bad costuming choice, as far as I'm concerned. So she's basically very clumsily kind of follows them along. And then you think to yourself, well, maybe there's going to be some sort of romantic interest or some sort of like, why is she there? Is she there to like balance out the machismo? Is she there to balance out some of the, to provide a voice of reason? Or like, she has to bring something to the table. And she really doesn't. She really doesn't bring any of that. And there's some scenes between Swan, who is the de facto leader of the Warriors, and her, where they treat each other really terribly.
Yeah.
They just are, you know, they kind of like each other, but they're just like,
they,
you know,
they mostly just bicker and yeah. are annoyed with each other. Hey, what's your problem?
Right. No. And it's kind of annoying as an audience member. Yeah. And I say this as a fan of her and of the movie.
Right.
But I'm kind of like, I wish they found a way to make that a little more smooth and, yeah. and a little more organic to the plot.
Yeah. Well, and you had read something, I believe, on Wikipedia that said that originally she was supposed to have a romance with a different character.
Yes.
Fox?
No, Fox is the one who gets pushed off the subway train platform. And
that's not the same one that she was supposed to have the romance with? I thought all that...
No.
I thought no. they killed off Fox because he was a pain in the ass.
Yes, that's
true.
And he
was supposed to have a relationship with her.
I think you're mixing... Well...
It's very possible.
If you want to look it up, but I think that if memory serves, is that those are two separate things.
Okay.
One is that Fox, the person who plays Fox, did not get along with Walter Hill, and they were fighting all the time, so basically Walter Hill decides to, spoilers, kill this character, and then goes so far as to not include his name in the credits because he didn't finish the film, because he was ostensibly fired from the movie. And the other part of it was that Mercy was supposed to have a love interest with, I think, with Ajax?
Ajax, James Remar?
I think so, but
okay.
maybe not. But like another character, and there was no chemistry. So they, which by the way, all of this being said, it smacks of sort of like a, they have a plot, they have a script, they have the story, but they are definitely kind of tweaking as they assemble the shots and as they assemble the movies, which also has this great homemade feel to it, which I really like.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that, just back to what you were saying, like, that was a decision made while filming, or
right.
not after the fact, but that might speak to a little bit of why.
I think what you're thinking of is that when she is with Fox and they're running away from a gang or the police, and that she trips, like in real life, she trips and falls, and Fox doesn't let go of her, not maliciously, but just doesn't let go of her, but causes her to break her arm, which then leads her to wear the jacket because she had a cast on.
Right.
I think that's the kind of relationship with the character Fox, where that's how that happened. But I think that the other part of it, because Fox is such a minor character, regardless of the fact that he was fired from the movie, he's not one of the main guys.
Right.
I think it's another main guy that she's supposed to have a romantic interest in, and there just wasn't chemistry, so it switches to Swan. But there's no chemistry there either, as far as I'm concerned. And again, they just fight like an old married couple. But so, I mean, the fighting is so basic as to say, like, he says, like, why are you following us? And she's like, well, I don't need to follow you. And he's like, fine, get lost. And she's like, but I want to follow you. And he's like, well, I want you here, too. And it's like, what am I?
It's so bizarre because he tells her to go away. And then he catches up with her again. And he's like, no, come with us. And she's like, you sure change your mind quick.
Yeah. And the quick.
And all of a sudden, she was literally begging to come with. She was going, come on. And somehow he resists, which I have no idea how he resists.
Especially because there's no other ladies that
are
like...
And then he changes his mind, and then she's like, no.
No, the explanation he gives when he changes his mind to her, the explanation he gives to her is that I was kind of harsh on you earlier. Like, I felt like that was kind of, I was kind of rough.
It's like he's almost apologizing.
Yeah. It's such a weird moment. So that, but by the way, all that being said, that is literally my one genuine criticism of the movie, is that they kind of don't know what to do with her character.
Right.
The other stuff is more just like, it's more baggage that as a viewer you might have, and I'm saying get over it. If you take issue with gangs being silly, you're not going to like the movie, but that's not a problem of the movies. I think the problem of the movie is more like they don't know what to do with her. But I still...
And then at the end, when it's like suggested that like they're a couple now, I'm still happy. I'm like, oh yay, romance was found. But I also love the line where he says, like, you're just part of the shit that happened tonight. You know, that's a great line.
It's an absolutely great line.
Yeah. Fox dying is super weird.
It's super weird
because you think it's increasing the stakes.
Yes.
Because
shit got serious.
No
there.
One dies. Right. You know, like we're in danger.
We're supposed to assume that the leader of the Warriors, Cleon, the very first leader of the Warriors, Cleon, when they go to the delegation, that he gets killed at the delegation. It's never shown.
No.
It's never on screen, but like he's dispatched with Fox's death. That's when like shit got real. I mean, this movie is not super violent. Not super. I mean, there's a couple gunshots, like hardly
Cyrus
any guns.
Gets killed. And then there's some fighting, but like there's only two deaths.
Right. And
one of them is the Warriors.
And hardly anyone uses guns. Like even I think the Lizzies have a gun.
It's a lot of bats and
It's bats and
chains,
switchblades and
hockey sticks at one point.
Right. Roller skates.
Feminine wiles,
yes,
I believe, at one point are used as a weapon.
Yes. I love the DJ, too, giving the direction on behalf of the riffs, on behalf of Masai, the de facto leader of the of Cyrus's gang. She would be like, hey, all you would-be warriors.
But she doesn't even use them like by name. She doesn't even call them out by name. She's like giving hints and then playing Nowhere to Run on the radio, like as a threat to just these eight specific guys. Like, and they're not listening to the radio, by the way. They're just on the run.
Hey, boppers out there. If you got away, I think that they found their way to second base. They had a ground rule double. There's one sequence in particular after they fight the baseball gang where she throws a bunch of bad baseball puns, and I kept on wanting to go further with ground rule double and balks and who's a designated hitter on this one.
So according to what I'm reading, originally the character of Fox was supposed to end up with Mercy.
Well, fuck me!
While Swan was captured by a rival homosexual gang known as the Dingoes, only to escape later. Hill watched the dailies and realized that Beck and Van Valkenburg had great chemistry. The script was rewritten.
Which, by the way, is like, nah, not even.
So they ended up together, which then led to Thomas Waits, who was Windows in The Thing, arguing with Hill and then being fired and killed off.
Oh, that does make more sense. And now can you go back and erase all the shit I said?
Not a problem.
Okay,
I might disagree with the...
No. I'm reading right here on IMDb. In the script, Fox was originally the love of Mercy, but the two actors had no chemistry. Fudge.
Beck.
That makes way more sense. I feel like a dummy.
It's okay. Apparently they wanted, for our boy Vermin, they wanted to cast Tony Danza.
Yes.
Vermin's every line delivery is golden.
Although Tony Danza, you could say like, oh, he should have been in the Warriors. The Warriors is like a timeless, you know, it's a cult favorite. It's standed the test of time, but he made the right move because I think he... said no to Vermin to do Taxi.
To do Taxi.
Right, the TV show
and
Taxi.
And I honestly think...
Not the Jimmy Fallon movie.
I honestly think had he played Vermin, I think he would have pulled focus. Like...
Yeah, maybe.
Not that like Tony Danza's a great actor, but he's enough. He has enough star power, exactly,
right.
That he has had multiple successful series and has played the lead in movies.
No, the dude that played Vermin is perfect. He's probably my favorite because
Of the acting is not great in the movie.
And I will say also that like, you know, Swan's the de facto leader of the Warriors on their trek back to Coney Island. And a lot of the characters, like I don't think Swan, I don't really... like him. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's just kind of a strong, silent type who doesn't respond to stuff.
And Michael Beck, the actor that plays him, he's, you know.
Yeah.
He's fine.
He's fine.
Right.
Vermin is kind of in a different movie.
Sort of the comic relief.
Yeah. He just says these crazy things and has such earnest sort of delivery.
The thing is, like, the acting is pretty bad throughout, right? And yet, it's all... bad in the same way,
right?
And so it feels very much of a piece. Like most of the actors feel kind of amateurish, but then when they're all the same kind of amateurish, it starts to feel like a choice.
Yes.
And it becomes endearing and you're like, well, I like the acting in this movie because it perfectly fits in with this thing that has become the Warriors.
Yeah.
I think Deborah Van Valkenburg is better than most of the cast?
Yes and no. I think that she's better than most, but I think, you know, her accent's pretty bad and you know, plays tough and she has a tougher face. I know that's, but I mean, I say that as like, I like it. I think she's very pretty. But I don't know if it's, you know, it comes.
And the other actor who I think kind of stands out is James Remar, who.
Which one's that?
Ajax?
Ajax. Yeah. As kind of an asshole. I mean,
kind of the dick member of the group. And I was complaining when we were watching it that, like, I think him and Michael Beck kind of look a lot alike. And so I thought that was an interesting choice to cast two actors who look so similar.
The one scene where there's three of the gang members, Rembrandt, Vermin, and another guy.
Yeah.
With the guy with the feathers, the African American guy with the feathers.
Yeah.
They're in the Lizzie's den.
Right.
And it was a moment where I liked the scene because I think it's an interesting sort of like they're being seduced by these women and kind of trapped. But I was also thinking like, oh, there's no real strong sort of like character to really, aside from Vermin. But right away, he's like, well, I'm happy to be. He's just like comedic and almost slapsticky how much he wants to make out with these girls.
Right.
And there's no real strong person to kind of pull them out of that. But they just escape.
Yeah. Well, they break through the door.
And the girls are like, rats.
As soon as they're out the door, the girls, well, we can't follow them. Even though we have guns, distance weapons, we can't possibly put a stop to them
now. No, because if we can't shoot them when they're 5 feet away, what makes them think they can shoot them when they're 15 or 50 feet away?
Yeah, it's very bizarre. And then later, when David Patrick Kelly takes a shot at Swan, like, he moves out of the way. There's a row of dudes behind him, and yet somehow none of them are shot either.
Without knowing the movie, I actually thought that it was going to be a situation in which he shot the girl.
Oh.
Because, I thought, Swan moving and throwing the switchblade at his wrist.
Right.
Speaking of...
David Patrick Kelly.
Yes. Two things. One, he reminds me a lot of Vincent Gallo.
Okay.
From, you know, from every Vincent Gallo thing. From Brown Bunny to the Stern Show. And number two is I get a legitimate, like, he's a crazy person.
Yeah, he's, but, I forgot to mention him. He's great as well.
Yeah. He's actually probably one of the better actors in that he, not in a way that's like, he's definitely showy and over the top, but not in a way, like, it feels authentic and kind of scary.
Yeah.
But he's an actor. I mean, he's not just this, he's not Snoop from The Wire, who's a real gang member pulled off the street. He was on Broadway, and I think Walter Hill saw him and said, you know, you
and
be...
still works to this day. I
right.
mean, he's one of these guys who's in everything.
Right. Just a really great, creepy, psycho, sociopathic performance.
And the Warriors Come Out and Play is obviously sort of his most iconic moment. But the thing, his scene that I like the best is when one of his gang members says, like, why are you smiling? He says, I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact...
I'm having so much fun or something.
And it's like... He is. Like, this is what he started all this shit. And they said, why did you do that? He's like, well, I just like to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Right. You know,
he's just like,
it's chaos.
Just wants to create chaos.
Yeah.
And he's a pretty great villain.
Yes.
You know, for the movie.
Absolutely.
But yeah, back to James Remar. I think he's good. And I think he pops. And, you know, I think there's a reason why he goes on to work more than a lot of the cast in this movie. He would work with Walter Hill again in... 48 Hours. He plays the villain in...
He plays Eddie Murphy.
In 48 Hours. he's an actor who I'm always happy to see show up in stuff, but I feel like the older he gets, the worse he gets. Mm. Like, maybe it's just because he's always cast now as like a more serious type, and I don't think that suits him. I think he's better as kind of an intense, crazy slime ball, which is what he played a lot of in the early days.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's good here. I don't know. Again, that scene with him and Mercedes Rule is so strange because up to this point, he's like...
Wait, that is... Yeah, I thought you were making a joke. That's Mercedes Rule in the
yeah, that
the,
for real. That's
the woman
Mercedes
in the
Rule.
On the park bench.
The cop, spoilers.
The female.
It's so... Because up until that point, he's like kind of the asshole of the group in that he wants to be the leader and he questions why Swan is made leader and... But he's also like the guy who wants to fight. He's tired of running.
He saves his gang member,
right.
Gangmates.
And when it does come time to fight, like, he can fight.
You
like,
want him on your side.
Right. He ends up taking out a bunch of the baseball Furies and, like, he's a fucking hard ass.
Yeah, fucking kid is a hard ass.
Fucking Ajax kid. but then, so he has the scene with Mercedes Rule where I don't know what her plan was. Like, she's an undercover cop. She invites him to sit down. Up until that point, he hasn't broken any laws. Now, maybe she recognizes him as being in a gang because he's wearing the vest.
Right.
Ultimately, I assume he's arrested for sexual assault, which I don't even understand that leap. Oh, and I'm not. These are not critiques of the movie, by the way. We're just talking about the movie. But she's like, invites some sort of physical contact. she mauls her.
Explicitly
like,
says something like, well, why don't you come here and like, right. You know. Show me,
right?
You know.
Like, go lean in and kiss her, but instead he just like grabs her boobs and starts choking.
Right.
Just like, why is that your opening move?
We both made comments
that's
like
second or third,
and she, I think,
you
by the
build
way,
build up to the choking
before we know that she's a cop. She even says like, "Slow down, slow down."
Right.
Like, and we even said like, she's into it. Like, I mean, if she wasn't a cop, like, no, she wants you to. She's inviting.
She's asking
advances,
you to make a move. Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah, like, but why do
he's
you
like,
have to rah, rah, rah,
rah, rah. He's just like growling and just like grabbing her boobs
in this crazy way, and I mean that seems to be what gets him arrested. Now maybe it's just his gang affiliation that gets him arrested, I don't know, but like
right.
You just think like, oh, I kind of wish Ajax had on the one level, like at that point you're glad he's arrested because you're like, well, this dude's a fucking rapist and a menace.
He's right, he's kind of a loose cannon,
right, and so it's fine that he's like out of the movie, but part of me is like wishes he was still around at the end because whatever,
yeah.
But he can't be because like he just couldn't control himself from raping. I don't get it.
I need to get my dick wet.
that might have happened. Just be patient, Ajax.
There's a couple of sequences where it's like they see girls and they're so like, I mean, they're
it has like that Grease approach. It's like, oh, hey, whoa.
Let me paint
everyone's
a picture
a little bit broad.
They are literally running for their lives. Their people are chasing them across two boroughs of New York City, and they're
not
you
just
know,
people.
Five,
everyone
ten
is.
Miles.
There are hundreds of
cops, gang members. Everyone is chasing them.
Doesn't Cyrus point out there's like 60,000 gang members
yeah,
in New York?
It's crazy, right? And then
and only 20,000 cops.
When they see the Lizzies, the three of them, those guys I mentioned before, see the Lizzies, they're like, "We should probably get going. We don't have time for this." And I think Vermin responds with, "We got nothing but time." And it's kind of like, "Well, that makes zero sense." But he is so. Like jacked up, he just is so he wants to have some female relations that he can't not like blah, blah, blah. Picturing these guys like
yeah
with like their eyes trumpeting out of their heads
yeah.
Ahooga, ahooga.
Yeah, they're the guy in the Ferris Bueller dance sequence, do you know who I'm talking about, who like is shaking
yes yes he's on the steps of the Daily Center like walking down like a duck and just starts shaking. No, those might be two different people, but they're both
all
those guys. And the other guy is like singing Dankeschön on a float.
Let us reset because we love the Warriors. And I truly do love the
Warriors.
Oh,
I think this is all just like, let's talk about the Warriors. And it's how it's, we also love it because it's batshit crazy. And that is definitely
in the best way. Again,
yes.
Like my fan. And I love the movies where Walter Hill is allowed to just like execute his crazy ideas of masculinity and like shoot violence. And again, if you haven't seen Southern Comfort or Extreme Prejudice, I urge you to check both of them out. I wish Extreme Prejudice would get a real release in the United States. It's available on Blu-ray in the UK in the States, it's there's like a full screen DVD from Artisan. Like it's like a VHS transfer. It's
the cardboard snap case.
Garbage. I don't know why we can't get a better version of that movie, which is amazing. It's so good. So I love that Walter Hill. But my favorite Walter Hill is like, I'm crazy Walter Hill, I get to like make up the world.
You made
and
a comment.
He's so great at that.
That after he had this huge commercial hit with 48 Hours.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the one for them. So the next movie, the one right. for me, is like his choice right. of all the movies he can make is to make a right. rock and roll fable
right.
to make Streets of Fire. And it's a crazy movie in which he creates his own universe. It's timeless, has great characters, has great like things you've never seen before in a movie.
Yeah.
Like I want to have the two leads fight it out with giant hammers. I can't do that with a Hollywood picture. I got
to
go indie.
But it is a Hollywood picture. Well, like right. he got Universal to bankroll that thing, which yeah. is again what happens when you make a big hit. And then the movie bombs, and then he has to like go make Brewster's Millions. You know, like one for them again.
And I guess
there's no Walter Hill touch in that.
Something about the Warriors, and this is probably, I'm the wrong person to talk about Westerns, because
can you get me the right person?
He's right here in my pocket.
Yay!
I'm the wrong person.
Johnny Western, you brought him with.
Johnny Western.
He's so small, but he knows so much about Westerns.
I am the wrong person to talk about Westerns.
Did you know the Road Warrior is actually a Western?
Let me tell you about Star Wars. This movie, to me, while not having the traditional Western sort of like, I'm sure JB can talk about the Westerns and what they need to be Westerns and things like that. And
horses.
That's all fine.
They need horses.
Well, but, you know, the characters, the good people are this and the bad people are this.
Cowboys.
To me, this feels Western adjacent.
Yeah.
Because of just like the road quality aspect to it. Like they're on this kind of adventure that they're being pursued by these people. It has this kind of epic scope and sweep. And all that being said, it's a very kind of smallish movie, like where the sets are small. And like you said before, it's not like we're watching them in one take go traverse all these different places. It's
right.
static takes and they're on a train and they're on, most of it actually is real. I read that the almost every scene is a real location except for the bathroom where they fight the punks on roller skates. That was a set. That's like the one set in the entire movie.
And you can kind of tell. And that's one of the things, you know, one of the things that I love about Streets of Fire is just how production designed it is.
Sure.
In creating this alternate reality. But one of the things I love about The Warriors is that it does use all these authentic locations.
Right.
That they're just shooting all nights, all on location. You know, I think it's so effective. And again, the only thing that kind of separates it from the recognizable world is this idea that there's all these crazy, everywhere you turn, there are giant gangs in mashing costumes.
Right.
Some of them apply like elaborate makeup or
right.
dress up like mimes.
Yeah. And it's,
I want to picture those gang meetings. So what's going to be our thing? We could all wear baseball uniforms. Yeah, but that's not enough.
What about crazy kiss makeup?
Yeah, maybe. I've been working on my makeup. Does this look better in yellow or blue? And it was exciting to show you the Warriors because when you, the baseball furies, now you get the reference from Murder Party.
Yes.
Because the guy in Murder Party is dressed up as one of the baseball
Murder
furies.
Murder Party is such a great movie, and I did not get the reference.
That's okay. But again, it's one of those things that has kind of become, I feel like the two things that are most iconic about the Warriors now are David Patrick Kelly's line, Warriors yeah. come out and play, and the design of the baseball furies, you know. And I know it was made into a video game like in the mid-2000s,
yeah,
maybe
05,
which I never played because I don't really play video games.
There's but. Something even I think that even the there's something even I think that even is the sentence I just said out loud on a podcast. The title card of the Warriors is a spray painted The Warriors.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that sets the tone. And it's that even for me has become such an iconic thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like, you know, when they show the Oscar sort of retrospective, or not necessarily Oscars, but any sort of award show, they go over a person's filmography and they usually show title cards from the
right.
movies. I feel like that is something that you would just instantly get the feel and the vibe and the grittiness and all that stuff for. It's really great.
And the opening credits are structured in very much the same way I think that Streets of Fire were, which is that they take a really long time.
There's hardly any dialogue.
And they're all spaced out with kind of like advancing the story during the credits and kind of setting
right.
things up during the credits. And so they end up taking a long time because you get long scenes of exposition and then a credit and then a scene of exposition and then a credit. And Streets of Fire does the exact same thing.
It's also probably the more of the art, some of the most artistic / comic booky moments, because it's a scene where they'll do a title card, a cutaway to a train, and then a character talking, but his profile just saying one line,
right.
Cut away to the train,
right.
Cut away to the person answering from a different
Again,
perspective.
Again, they're looking very, like comic book frames.
Right, very kind of exaggerated lighting,
yeah.
You know, but yeah.
I love this movie.
Yeah, I really got on board with it.
That's
I was nervous because I think I knew that you really liked it, and I was like,
well, and it's just a movie with like a huge reputation behind it,
right? And
which
I didn't
is
want
always
to...
weird when you see it, and you're like,
it's also, and I encourage everyone out there to recommend and suggest movies to do podcasts on. But sometimes when you have this recommendation, you know in the back of your head, I'm like, this guy has recommended this probably because
wants to hear us talk about it. Well, hopefully,
because he loves,
hoping
it.
That we like
yeah.
it. Yeah.
And so I was nervous, but I say without any reservation, it's not. I'm not putting this on to you know. It was a really enjoyable. Like fun movie. And it was also fun to watch with someone. I do think if I was watching it by myself for the first time, I think I could go back to it again and watch it by myself and appreciate it. But mm-hmm. watching it for the first time with you and kind of being able to riff on some of the things
right,
and like
right.
the goofiness of the gangs at first might have been like, well, that's creep, that's weird. Like, look at this gang, they're a bunch of mimes, and this gang's a bunch of crazy, you know,
right.
whatever. But then you just kind of embrace the wackiness of it all, and it just makes it that much better.
Well, plus, if you were sitting by yourself, you would have been like, where's Pam Grier? When does coffee show up?
Exactly.
Where the fuck is Pam Grier, Ted? anyway, is that all we're going to say about The Warriors?
Yeah, I think that's good.
I love it. And I don't even love Joe Walsh, but when that song kicks in at the end, which is a song that I knew probably before I ever saw The Warriors for the
You're
first
talking
time
about the,
in
the
city.
The Warrior.
Exactly.
That song.
Patti Smyth and Scandal. When In the City kicks in,
yeah.
Man, every time I'm just like, I'm going to watch The Warriors again right after this ends.
Yeah.
Because I just want to, again, build towards that moment of them on the beach. I love it.
Well, it speaks to it also that you can't, there wouldn't be a movie. If this movie was remade, it would be very different. It would be very.
I so hope they don't.
I hope they don't either. And I have not heard that, but I think that it's so.
At some point, right?
It's going to
like,
be. I mean,
right.
probably.
Because people recognize it and like it, so let's do it.
But the original movie, if you really break it down, what makes it so unique and so memorable and so great isn't just the memorable line, isn't just the goofy memes, isn't just the spray painted title card. It's all the stuff that could only exist in 1979.
Yeah.
Or
absolutely.
that era.
Anyway, thanks for talking about The Warriors
yeah.
with me, Douglas. Hopefully we did the movie justice, Albert, and thank you for the recommendation.
Yes, thank you.
If you guys have shows that you want to recommend, we do our best to touch on them. You know, we have a list right now. It's pretty long. Every once in a while we pull it out and say, okay, let's do one of these. So if you recommended something a long time ago, we haven't gotten to it yet, I apologize. We will eventually try to.
Yes.
Most of the time. Sometimes, and this is always recommend something, but sometimes I read one and I'm like, there's not a show there. You
sure.
know, like it might be a movie that you love, but there might not be an hour show there, but we'll see. Anyway, but if you want to recommend something, you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And you can find us online at fthismovie.net. Follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. Like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram.
Periscope.
Periscope is a thing
that
we did
now.
Do you
think that we'll do... That maybe I'm putting you on the spot.
You
think
absolutely are putting me on the spot.
Do you think you'll be doing more Periscopes, maybe?
I'm sure we will.
It seemed to be pretty
point.
Successful
yeah.
after the fest. People seem to like it, and they can... I like the interactivity with it, too. I think
right.
that's something that we can definitely...
And maybe that's something, you know, because sometimes people have asked if we could do more, like, live tweets, like at this movie fest. But I feel
yeah.
like if we do it all the
it
time...
It takes away a little
it
bit.
It takes away from the specialness of it. I think it's the kind of thing that maybe should be once a year. But maybe Periscope... takes the place of that, so maybe now at the end of Scary Movie Month, instead of doing a big live tweet, we do a Periscope or something. You know,
yeah.
the problem with the end of Scary Movie Month is that it's also Halloween night, but we will see.
Yeah, no, there's opportunity there.
And now we're just a few months away from Junesploitation, everyone. So
yeah, that's the cool thing. And again, if you're new, because there seem to be a bunch of new people, Voodoo Fuzz, I'm giving you a shout out. There's a new guy named Ross who just joined us, and he commented in the podcast from last week. I guess by the time this drops, it'll be the podcast from last week.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of new people. So stick around, because there's lots of other things that we've got going on. We have three marquee events. This one, Scary Movie Month, and Junesploitation. Junesploitation's
yeah.
next. It's a different vibe, but it's just as fun as far as I'm concerned. I love it that it's... I love reading people's reviews. And
yeah, me too. And I hear about all kinds of new movies. And you can watch The Warriors for Junesploitation, because
yeah.
We're replacing Trauma Day with Mime Day. So it's this one. Or
I can't name a mime movie.
There's a mime in Shakes the Clown, played by Robin Williams.
Oh,
so if we could do a Robin Williams day and you could
watch
The Warriors.
He was a real mime in Central Park. That's
well,
why
there
he,
you go.
Yeah.
See? Anyway, thank you guys
yes.
very much for listening. Thank you for the suggestion. And we will talk to you guys next week.
I got the big one. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.